Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on the Score.
Quarterback School Patreon community, as always, thank you for your continued support. Y'all make this group go. Specifically, Bears fans, big part of the Patreon community. I certainly appreciate you. Have appreciated you for years now. Only the sickos up in here. Took last week off from the Bears. Not gonna lie, felt good. Didn't even get a full week though. Didn't even know they're back on Thursday. 6-3. I mean, I can't even imagine. I turned this thing on. Got back from the zoo. We're going to do it together. And this is it, huh? 4th and 10.
So that's the way the non-interception streak ends. Just a prayer at the end of the game.
I'm just tired of this, man. I'm tired of this slow-ass, no effort, no sense of urgency route running. I just don't like it. It's not good enough, man. All we can do is point out what's on the film.
But these two quarterbacks, these young QBs, are playing in their coldest game ever today here at Lambeau Field.
And it's wild they pulled this game off. The Packers have to just be just disgusted with themselves. Why is nothing ever open on time?
Williams chased again. Flush to the right. Throws to the sideline.
Nice job to the sideline. Oh, yeah. Got Rome.
Odunze, does he make the catch? Yes, he does.
There aren't very many people, if anyone, better at full stride out to his right, throwing on the run. World class. It really is. How do they win this game? 3rd and 11. They have no timeouts. It looks like Caleb gives him a signal here for the slant, which is a super heads-up play.
Williams over the middle. It's DJ Moore. And just like in week 11, it's going to come down to a Cairo Santos field goal try.
That's a massive, massive, well-executed two-minute situation there. Big time. That's a great win. You know, it is a nice win. It's ugly, man. The whole thing's been ugly. But you got to appreciate that final little execution. But man, I'm not sad at all to not watch this unit anymore, to be honest with you.
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on the Score.
You need to check out what JT O'Sullivan is doing with the QB school. Be part of the Patreon community that he is built on, trying to learn more and more about how football is and should be played. We're very lucky to have him on the show. He joins us now on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. JT, thank you so much for joining us. We really, truly appreciate it. There's a lot to get to with you, but I'd love just, if you could, what was the good and the bad of what you saw of Caleb Williams in year one?
Man, that audio was like a trip down memory lane that I never wanted to go down again. That was that was awesome. I appreciate that, Alex. It honestly was kind of exactly what I think I expected, where there were unbelievable flashes. Maybe not as many flashes as I would love to have seen as far as like extended plays, super wow plays early on in the regular season. But I saw the talent, the arm angles, the ability to extend, create. But man, I mean, just the obstacles that I thought he was going to face coming into that organization with the pass pro issues up front, with what I perceived as a perimeter that probably wasn't as good as people wanted it to be. You know, you face those challenges over the course of a whole season. People start getting fired. I think it got even worse for me early on with the Hard Knocks thing. I know people came at me sideways, but there were a number of things that I would say were video evidence of things maybe not going in the right direction early. And even if they were semi-staged for Hard Knocks, they were still uncomfortable for me. And it wasn't something that looked like it was a roadway or a roadmap to success. And you saw those things play out in real time, really. And the crazy thing for me is I'm a fan of the fans of the Chicago Bears. I'm not necessarily a Bears fan by any means, but I respect that fan community and the support, because they are the one of ones, in my opinion, in the league. They are that locked in, and I appreciate them. But watching the film every week, it was painful. It really was. There were many pain points over the course of that season, and I'm excited to kind of wipe the slate clean and see what it looks like with a new regime that hopefully is a lot more demanding, has a lot more accountability. We interchange out some pieces, and hopefully it goes in a whole new, better direction.
Man, it's well said. JT, we're excited to move forward with a new staff and a new nest, but this report, this excerpt of the book from Seth Wickersham, has kind of re-inflamed the conversation. We want to figure out exactly what is on Caleb, what is not on Caleb. And, you know, I'm sure you read the article and like the image of him ending up watching film alone and saying, I don't know what I'm looking for. We had a conversation yesterday with Kurt Warner, who really believes in like the personal responsibility of the quarterback to find the lessons, find the teachers, if that's what he needs, you know, to learn stuff. But we watch this, and I personally feel like the coaches and the head coach should have figured out a way to get the kid what he needs. Like, that's their job. Where does the personal responsibility start and end for you, for a rookie quarterback in a mess of a situation?
Well, many things here. I didn't read the article, have no interest in the article. I do. I've got bits and pieces enough to understand what you're asking and what they're talking about. And I love Kurt. Kurt and I probably disagree a little bit in this regard, where I would say I would probably come down somewhere in the middle. You know, that's probably not the greatest, cleanest answer for most people. But I do think that there has to be some sort of framework or scaffolding in a situation, especially for a first round guy. I think a guy, and I'm just speaking for Kurt here, but as a guy who was a low round draft pick, sixth round pick, or maybe a guy who wasn't drafted, you're never going to be forced into a situation like Caleb was, as the first overall, as someone coming in with all sorts of hype, to think that they already know how to do that. I think would be a big mistake for a lot of coaches in any organization, to be able to think that somebody has all the answers coming into the league. And I would never want any player, not just a quarterback, but any player in the building to feel like they're on it on their own in any aspect of the game if I was a coach or a teacher. So there's certainly some fault on both sides. Now, that being said, for a guy who's going to be such an achiever, who's someone who wants to come in and turn a franchise around, there's going to have to be some level of personal responsibility to also seek out that information. And I also would imagine, I've never explicitly asked, but I know that in Caleb's world or orbit, he has access to some of the best football minds in the world as far as teaching, not only throwing mechanics, but ball at the highest level. And so, yeah, it might be frustrating to have to go outside the building. Maybe you shouldn't have to go outside the building, but I think that it's, the truth is probably somewhere in the middle, in my opinion, in that regard.
Who taught you how to watch tape effectively, and who was the best that you ever were in the room with when it came to that?
So, I mean, here's the thing too, bro. Like, my whole job at this point is watching film and communicating. So I get probably more experience than most. When I got into the league, now, coaches up along the way, I had great coaches from an early on high school level, college level. But when I got into the league, the guy who taught me NFL offense was Mike McCarthy. And so the way that he taught it provided me with multiple lenses to be able to, I think, better understand it and quote unquote, watch film. I also got a chance to learn from what I considered like a grinder of a quarterback, Jake Delhomme, who was a veteran guy in the league and had kind of created his own path that was very open and shared. And I, you know, wanted to learn. So I was always kind of that like annoying golden retriever, like asking questions of them and that's not even talking about my position coach. So there are a lot of resources available, in my opinion, in my anecdotally for me, but I also was very proactive. I was fascinated, and I wanted, at that point, I probably wanted to coach. So I wanted to know as much as I possibly could about everything. And so, you know, I do think that there is probably, it's an interesting story to feel like, oh my God, how could this guy not have the resources to be go out there and be successful? But I could also say where, you know, man, if you're unhappy and you're the guy, walk in there, put your fist on the table, say, hey, I need to understand, what do I need to know? What do I have to know walking into the building on Monday to be able to be successful in this system? And then again, if you're the coach, I was around a number of systems that would come in and say, hey, all right, the starter is responsible for the corners. The backup is responsible for the safeties. The third guy is responsible for the nickel. When we show up on Wednesday morning, everyone's going to have the capacity to talk about these guys and fill the room in a deep dive about what we're going up against our opponent this week. So you had this built-in runway to be able to say, yeah, I might not be watching film like, hey, what's the game on the interior when we run inside zone or duo? Like, I don't care playing quarterback. But I do want to know personnel-wise what we're dealing with on the perimeter, and I don't have time to watch five guys in detail, but I can rely on the room to elevate us collectively to be able to come in here with a detailed plan of our opponent every single week. So little things like that, that's all dependent on the system, the organization. Every organization, every room is going to be a little different.
In your opinion, how should a QB room look from a personnel standpoint?
Re Hall of Famers. it's a living organism. It's a moving thing. Every year is going to be a little bit different. I think the best quarterback rooms are rooms that feel like there is a collective spirit for the person who's playing to be at their absolute best every single week. Some rooms might be competitive, where we might have a camp battle. Some rooms might have a very clear pecking order, but there's got to be some element of being pushed. There's got to be some element of collaboration where we can, hey, what do you see? Did you see this? What do you see on the sidelines? What do you see on film? What do we see on third down? Can we use this collectively to elevate our game so that you feel like you're all going in the same direction? But I do think it's a unique cocktail of competition, collective push in the right direction, input, feeling like you're being heard, feeling like you're making a difference, because only one guy gets to play in that regard. So it's a little bit unique, but it's all about, hey, can the dude who's playing play at a really high level for this room, this organization, to go in the direction that we all want to go? Or else we're all probably going to be looking for new teams.
Yeah, Lawrence is very happy and was hoping for a veteran like Case Keenum. And here's Case Keenum now in the room with Caleb Williams. So he's got somebody. We're talking to JT O'Sullivan, former NFL QB, founder of the QB School. These are the quarterbacks that you played with, among them. Favre, Carson Palmer, you mentioned Jake Delhomme, Kyle Orton, obviously, Rex, and Rex Grossman, Tom Brady. That's pretty good. Who was the best at really kind of guiding you and also just, you know, being cool in that way?
I mean, I hijacked so many things from all of those guys. I think the guys that I probably resonated the most with, that had the most meaning in my career, were probably Jake Delhomme. And then I was around Brad Johnson in Minnesota. And those guys were just so authentically themselves. They were comfortable. You know, Johnson had already won a Super Bowl. So, like, they had already, you know, they had come into their own and established their path. Jake kind of took on a different level when he went to Carolina and went to the Super Bowl. But those guys that just understood their game, that were able to contribute to the team, maybe not as the guy, because of that, and maybe wasn't necessarily going to be my opportunity on most teams I went to. And so just being able to kind of pick and choose little things from all of those games, not try to force feed it on my game, but just kind of take what I could to elevate what I could do in whatever role was kind of presented to me as the season went along.
So authentically themselves, speaking our language there, man, because like that was not what Matt Eberflus was. Not to bury him, but like it was so obvious he was, you know, he was a defensive.
Didn't like the haircut or the beard or whatever the hell they were talking about.
The glow up. No, dude, he knew he was a defensive coordinator impersonating a head coach, to be honest. He just kind of knew that. So like, you know, because he could have gone there and sorted out this personal dynamic that you're talking about. But, like, you were around Martz and Singletary and Adam Gase and Lovey and John Fox and Marvin Lewis and Norv Turner and, you know, Rod Chudzinski. So, like, who was authentically themselves and a real good communicator amongst those dudes?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of those guys were authentically themselves, and sometimes that rubs your ass the wrong way, you know, which was the problem with a lot of those guys. But I appreciated it. Like a guy like Mike, that I was never with him in Chicago, but was with him in multiple stops, and I have a lot of respect for Mike Martz. He was nothing but honest with me. I might not have always loved the way he went about it, but I appreciated his candor. I appreciated how explicit he was with his expectations. And that's just not what I encountered at every organization. And so you get somebody who's comfortable like that, who at least they might be demanding and they might have high standards. But yeah, get in line, bro. We're in the NFL. Like, yeah, that should be the expectation. You know, I might not like the language that you choose to communicate with or how you choose to communicate, but I don't care. Like, I want to get better. We all want to get better. You're not going to hurt my feelings in a meeting. Those types of things that I think, you know, maybe aren't for everyone, but you kind of get filtered out over the course of the league. I always just respected people that elevated my game, that gave me a deeper, better understanding, that helped me play better. and that at the end of the day, you felt like cared about you. Like it was more than just, you know, a jersey or a number or, you know, a spot on the roster. It was something where they were invested in your success, just like we were invested in the success of the team and the organization.
JT, you continue to do a service for Bears fans that are there inside of that Patreon community for QB School. I'd love to know, what do you think is interesting and matches between Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams?
Oh, man. I would say that the kind of unlimited potential, because I think of Ben Johnson as a very creative offensive architect who took, you know, certainly have a number of pieces in Detroit, but I don't think a whole lot of people before he got to Detroit, myself included, had any idea who the hell he was. And so to take a very strong offensive line, some nice pieces on the perimeter, get a young tight end, get a guy who essentially playing quarterback nobody wanted in the league. Now, he might have been a first overall pick at some point and a Super Bowl quarterback, but people weren't beating on the door for Jared Goff. And to lean into the strengths of that unit and make them one of, if not the premier offense and scheme in the league is something that you would be fired up for any quarterback to be associated with, let alone a guy who I personally am very high on in Caleb Williams' skill set to be able to go create, extend, lean into what he does really well. So I'm excited to see what Ben does leaning into the strengths of Caleb's game, because I think he did a great job of allowing Goff to be Goff at its best. And so what does that look like for Caleb? I honestly don't think we know. I think that's up to them to determine, and that's got to be kind of the exciting thing about it. Now, I still think, and this is going to get in people's feelings, man, I still think we've got a lot of chess pieces that will probably be moved around on the perimeter or, you know, some hurty feelings on this process. But once those things align into guys that, you know, fit the mold of what they were doing in Detroit as far as effort, as far as attention to detail, as far as yak, I think it's going to be pretty damn exciting to see what this unit looks like.
Some of your breakdowns last year, I thought that you were very honest and clear about your frustration with some of the things you were seeing from non-quarterback players on the Bears. When it came to looking at whether it was route running, route combinations, body language, what ticked you off about some of the things that you saw, like with DJ Moore, for example?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, too, where what I do is through a quarterback-centric lens, but so much of what the quarterback's performance or outcomes is tethered to other people, other positions, play calling, scheme, execution up front, execution on the perimeter, that I, by default, will lean into and go into those types of things that I find are interesting. And for me in the league on Sundays, there's so much attention to detail that goes into what happens up front and on the perimeter. And if we're talking about the perimeter, it's the easiest to see. It's a lot harder to see upfront play, you know, the line, how they pick up a game, the pass pro. You have to understand it. Sometimes you don't even know what the call is. You don't know what the rules are. You don't know what the technique is being taught. But on the perimeter, there are really only so many different combinations. There are really only so many different ways to be on time with certain routes. And when you notice that stuff is not consistently happening, and that you see what I would consider effort concerns or people not going what looks like they're 100% consistently, that to me, it's certainly a shot at the player, but it's really a shot at the whole unit, because there's no way that can happen in a team, in my opinion, at a team that functioned at a high level on either side of the ball, that you would allow that to happen as a coach, because you would get in front of the team on Wednesday morning or Monday and put it on the big screen and put a circle around it and say, this type of effort is not acceptable. And you have to be willing to stand on it and own it. And if it continues, you got to deal with it and you got to make a change. But there's no, people feel that. You can see that. There are other guys that watch the film. If you play offensive line, guess what? You watch your technique, then you watch the ball. Then you watch the guy who gets paid the most. Like those things, that's just how it works when you're watching film. And so to allow that to go on and on and on and feel like, am I the, like, I know I'm not the only person watching it, because we got thousands of people in this Patreon community also watching it, But I feel like I'm the only one living through it every single week. And I could not imagine watching that film on Monday, like down the hall from some of these cats, and just being like, yeah, we're good. We'll roll it back next week, see what happens. Like, it just that part of it was crazy frustrating, and I can't imagine it continues.
Well, the new sheriff in town does not allow that kind of thing, nor does apparently Antoine Randall-El, his assistant head coach. We saw him get in Jameson Williams' face many times in Detroit. So, look, Luther Burden is here to challenge DJ Moore in some ways, and Roma Dunze. Colston Loveland is here to challenge Cole Kmet in some ways. I wonder, do you have any feel for, you know, what kind of, who are going to be the targets of choice, or who would be the guys that you would trust from this batch that the Bears have put together here?
I mean, it starts and stops with Rome. You know, we'll see what else of those guys, you know, how it shakes itself out. I can't imagine necessarily all those guys touches survive this kind of regime change. That's just the reality of how these things work. I actually, like, this is going to sound counterintuitive unless you're, you know, listen to my rants all the time, but like, I actually thought Cole Kmet looked significantly better early last year. I thought he looked faster. I thought he looked more precise and explosive on the perimeter. And then it just didn't translate to production. So either there was a disconnect as far as expectations or whatever, but I could easily see them thriving in a 12 personnel, you know, type of unit or system with him going back to what he was so good at when I would joke around about being in a, you know, eligible tackle. But, you know, I think that there's a blend there for him to be really successful. I don't know what's going to happen on the perimeter because there are only so many touches. The expectations seem to be pretty clear as far as effort. We'll see what that looks like. I mean, it really doesn't matter what I think or what we think. The film will reveal itself. It really will. And the film up until this point has said that certain guys are going to really struggle with those kind of expectations.
JT, how can people join that Patreon community of yours?
Oh, that's a good question. I have a website. You could also go to Patreon. The Patreon world for me right now is very college football centric, coming out of the draft and kind of looking at guys who will be eligible next year. But once we get into the fall, you know, there's no way around it. I have certain groups, the Chicago group, the fan base has high expectations for the channel, and I enjoy the expectations that they see their film every single week. So it's something I lean into when it comes to supporting this unit.
The QB School, join that Patreon community and support JT O'Sullivan. JT, thank you so much for being generous with your time today. We truly appreciate it.
No problem, fellas. Appreciate it. And circle back in the fall.
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah,
we will.
Let's do it.
We will. That is JT O'Sullivan. And I mean, if the reaction via text and people inside the mob is any indication, people really enjoy that, and they should. He's great at this.
Yeah, for sure. And the expectations are real. And I keep thinking about what Olin Kreutz told us, which is that, all right, Caleb, the team is now invested in you. You invest in them.
Like, yep.
What do you got? But the real talk about DJ Moore and the real talk about some of the effort level is I think it's been coming to a head for a while, and there just was not deliberate and fearless communication from the coaching staff last year, and it could not have been more obvious. And that is not going to be the case with this new group, this regime change.
I think I loved that interview. I really did. Alex, great job getting JT O'Sullivan and giving us all of the background stuff too. Outstanding producing by you, young man.
Oh, and by the way, the open was Tanny's.
Everyone knows that the open was Tanny's.
Really?
Some except of the mob for, like, Alex? He's doing opens now?
Except for JT. It's all right. He's not threatened at all because no one can do what he does.
You didn't have to even say that. I'm perfectly content with JT O'Sullivan thinking that you went the extra mile.
I knew you were, Tanny. I thought about hopping in and saying, actually, that's our guy, Chris Tano. That's usually my gig. This time I was like, you know what? Let's let Alex have his moment. He established the connection with JT. Let's let JT think that Alex is just a freaking god of a producer.
Because we do. We do.
He's killing it, man.
So, except he didn't make it to what was a really interesting by chance meeting yesterday.
He missed it.
people think that stuff like I've this heard happens.
About it. I want to hear more about it.
Well, you were going to.
He was doing the open. That's what he was doing. Yeah.
Yeah, he was doing JT's open. Folks think that stuff like this happens to us all the time. Uh-huh. It doesn't. Yesterday was really unique, and a lot of things had to go into play for it to happen. But we ran into someone in the Chicago sports world, and we will tell you that we kind of get it now.
Yeah, I think that's true.
With this person.
It's a very likable experience we had with this person.
We'll tell you who next on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes.
Pat Tomasulo.
Well, look, I've had a good run.
You're the oldest. We could eliminate you. Tribute to Cyrus would go on. They'd find somebody else.
Hey, wait a minute.
Afternoons on The Score.
This was the best process I've seen in a heck of a long time from any team in the National Football League. Because they were, here's what they did, you know. That meeting between Ryan Poles and Ben Johnson, that one-on-one was so important because they had to come out feeling good about each other, and giving them that forum to do it under NFL rules where you can only do it virtually was absolutely fantastic. And it's the only team that does something like that.
Yesterday was a day, and we'll get to it. I just wanted to update something, especially since you were looking at the George Wendt clip.
Yes.
During the break, I got a text from someone who had been in contact with George over the last couple of weeks, specifically about what we were all thinking. Like, there's a Chicago Pope. There's got to be the Chicago fans. And this person sent me the screenshot of the text with George. I guess SNL didn't even think of it. This person asked, and George sent back, have not heard anything about reconstituting the super fans for the Pope stuff on SNL.
Ah, okay. So they didn't think to do it with everything that they were doing.
Yep. It happens, right? Like you're the anthology of the entire catalog of things that can be done for Saturday Night Live. But I appreciate this person sending that to me.
I watched the Michael Che and Colin Jost.
The joke swap
that they do every year.
It's amazing.
Might have been the most uncomfortable one yet.
It's pretty uncomfortable, and I'm glad that Scarlett leaned into it, especially since she was the target of the last one that they did.
Yeah.
I just and I've always liked that those two guys clearly love each other. Like it comes across.
Agreed.
In the way that they process stuff and how much fun they have, that they can go all the way up to the line and
dance on the line, hang out on that line for a while.
Steve Kerr's son's name was dancing right there on the line.
Yeah, and I wouldn't say Colin loves him. I would not say that. So coming in, you heard the agent of Ben Johnson, Rick Smith, on the Midday Show talking about the process and Kevin Warren of Ben Johnson being hired. And then you heard Solange's song, Cranes in the Sky.
Which is my favorite Solange song.
Mine too.
One of the things I always look at coming home to this city is I always look for cranes in the air.
And yesterday, as me and Tanny were walking downstairs together, I was like, who is that person standing there in the lobby of our building? It's a man and
it's
two
a guy.
It's a guy. That's Kevin Warren. So Tanny and I go over and say, hello. I stuck out the hand, introduced, and said, hey, Kevin, I'm Matt Spiegel from The Score. And he said, oh, man, I really enjoyed coming on with you guys. He's never been on with us. That's okay.
He's been on with me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Dan and I had him on.
Oh, I forgot that because I thought it was only the morning show.
No, Dan and I.
Yeah, I took you guys as a station.
Thing, okay,
you know? That's, you know.
That makes sense. And then we stood there, and all of a sudden we're talking to Kevin Warren, just shooting the breeze in the lobby. And I shot my shot and mentioned a mutual friend that we have. I said, oh, we have a mutual friend. I mentioned this person's name. He said, oh, wow, how do you know him? And I said, well, he's a music guy, and I'm a singer, so he's been there. And so Kevin immediately goes like this. He says, oh, what, you're singing? What song would you sing that would bring down the house? And I said, oh, well, As by Stevie Wonder. 'Cause I've been loving you always. And he goes, what? That's my wife's favorite song. Are you kidding me? I love that song. Why do you like that song? And all of a sudden, we're just talking music. us and Kevin Warren. And then Lawrence, you came down 20 seconds after we did.
And listeners, if you're wondering, did Speaks go full Stevie in the lobby of our building here? Yes, he did.
I did. I chose to sing a bit of As. Because he was like, yeah, what's that line? I believe that true love. And I went, I believe that true love asks for nothing. So like, yeah, so I'm, you know, doing that. And then Lawrence comes down. He's like, oh, hello, Mr. Warren. You shake the hand. And all of a sudden, the three of us and Kevin Warren and two of his co-workers with the Bears are just shooting the breeze in the lobby of the Prudential Building.
Yeah, it was really interesting because I had finished talking with Alex because Alex was like, here's what we're doing on the show tomorrow. Go do the promo. This is what our plan is for the show, right? Is that me?
I think it's your phone, yeah.
I don't think so. My screen's locked.
Okay.
Oh, it's the Superfans. That's what it is. It's my computer.
It's a computer.
There it is.
All right. So, yeah, we're all shooting the breeze with Kevin Warren, and he's like, he's talking about songs.
Yeah, and, you know, Songs in the Key of Life is my favorite album. If I had, if I gave the hypothetical of you could have any two artists, you could have an opener and you could have a headliner, I would have Prince open for Stevie.
Well, yeah, that'll work.
Right? Like, that would be what I would want. So, that album is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple other songs on that album that are, I mean, the whole thing is
the
just,
whole thing.
And he went to go see Stevie do the entire album.
Yeah, we're trading Stevie Wonder stories.
Oh, by the way, if you were wondering, Kevin Warren, Team Stevie Can See.
We're trading Stevie is not actually blind stories. I'm defending Stevie, which is my role usually in these conversations. I'm like, man, no way. And like, we're talking about when he catches the microphone. Kevin brings up that he was in the elevator with Shaq and said, hey, what's up, Shaq? So all of that. And then Kevin says, we're talking about As and talking about the album. And he says, hey, do you know the Golden Time of Day by Frankie Beverly and Maze? And I said, no, I don't know this song. And he's telling us why it's so great. And then Tanny says, do you know Zoom by the Commodores? And we're like, no, I didn't know either of those.
I fly far away from here.
Lawrence is all over it.
This song makes me feel, it's a perfect like Sunday morning song.
See, that's amazing because I immediately made a playlist on the way home, Kevin Warren's Soul on Spotify, and I put the two songs that he recommended into the playlist, and I love the Frankie Beverly one. I can't get enough of I listened to it again today. Listen to it on the way. I listened to both of them. Then this morning, I listened to Frankie Beverly. It didn't really hit me.
Well, you had said Lionel Richie and not the Commodores.
I know. It was embarrassing.
But I mean,
it's true.
Lionel wrote it.
I know, fine. But he was absolutely schooling me and enjoying that. He was enjoying that he was schooling me.
Yeah, but it was, and then he said something like towards the end. I don't know if you had said that he should come on or if he had just mentioned when he was doing radio in Minnesota.
Yes.
That he would just jump on and talk about music. And we were both like, if you'd like to do that, this is probably the show for you.
100%.
And considering that guy sits over there and this guy sits here.
And you sit right there. And so you're a music guy, man. We could have incredible conversations with Kevin. And he says, you know, no football? I mean, maybe just a little.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of have to ask him a little bit about what's going on with Arlington Heights, maybe.
But imagine we could slip it in after 5 minutes of soul conversation.
What I was thinking more of like it really being a long conversation about other stuff and then making its way to maybe football.
Agreed.
But it was really interesting. And so, you know, Spiegs was in his bag musically.
I was.
I went into reporter brain. And I was sitting there going, why is Kevin Warren in this building? And
I'm like, you're thinking, what's in this building?
I'm like,
where'd you get?
Well, Wilson is in the building.
Wilson Sporting Goods
is
here.
This is the worldwide like headquarters for Wilson Sporting Goods.
Let me do Chicago Bears, Wilson Sporting Goods. I wonder if they've ever done anything together.
Well, yeah.
Chicago Bears, Wilson's, Marquise.
Otis. Otis, he loves us.
And I'm like, what architects are in this building? What venture capitalists are in this building?
Ooh, what land surveyors are in this building?
Wow. Lawrence is just operating on a different level. I'm over here, man. Like, look at this business card he gave us. Nice thick card stock. This is a real business card.
That business card stock that he has is amazing.
You sent the GIF from
American Psycho, where the scene where they're all trading business cards in the boardroom. It's like, what is that? Bone. Patrick Bateman is sweating.
It is a beautiful business card that man sent us. Absolutely gorgeous.
Yes, it is. But I believe Pat Ryan is also in this building.
Yes.
So anyway, after we all broke.
This is why we're good partners. You went reporter and you're trying to piece it all together. And I'm just wanting to get deep into the soul playlist of Kevin Warren.
But I'm with you on that. Uh-huh. I thought it was great. And so the thing that people tell you about being in the room with Kevin Warren is that he understands people. And he is extremely charming. And I think that the three of us all walked away with, he is. I get it.
Dude,
I get the thing.
It happened to come up that I'm a singer, and he's like, and he immediately went to me, like, what song do you kill with? Like, he knew what he was doing. A very, very likable interaction. And Tanny, didn't you find him unbelievably likable in that short interaction? It's like crazy. You totally can get it, like Lawrence is saying.
Absolutely. You get all of it, you know? And I'm sure in a boardroom and when he's trying to get deals done, it's a different guy. You just flip a switch. But he was just so cool spending time with radio guys. Well, I'm sure radio guys are the last people you wanted to see at the end of his day, presumably, you know? But he was great.
Yeah. Texture says, and then Spiegs and Lawrence stopped by the Halas statue this morning.
We were there waiting.
5 a.m.
Hey, see Kevin, what would go down.
We figured it's cool now. We could just swing by, right?
So wait, can your Spotify list be for everyone? Can everyone see that?
It's just two songs.
It's just right now. It's just two songs.
Well, I think now I honestly think that you need to start going down the Frankie Beverly and Maze like rabbit hole.
I do, and I will. I do, and I absolutely will. I'm because, way too late for it
because that is ballpark for a guy like Kevin Warren. I am sure that he has been to plenty of I'm sure Frankie Beverly and Maze were here, what, last summer? I'm sure that he was there with the mayor who was there. I'm sure they had on their white linen.
Yeah.
I'm sure they were out there doing the electric slide.
Am I invited to that? I don't know.
Yeah. No, you are not.
Okay, I just had to double check.
But I do think that you would dig the music itself and Frankie Beverly's vocals sure.
Look, I there's so much in that genre that I adore and know well and just absolutely love. But of course we all have holes in our musical in our palates, if that's even a thing. I feel like Danny.
Yeah, no, that works.
Now you don't have a hole in the palate.
That wouldn't be good because the paint wouldn't be able to go on there. So I think it works.
There's the bucket. A hole in my palate can only be filled by you.
See, I went hole in the bucket. I went to spearhead.
But there is the thumb hole on the palate if you're holding it, though.
Yeah,
right.
There is a hole. So you got no place to put your thumb.
If
my palate.
Speaks meant the taste palate.
Oh, no.
Right?
No, yes. We know.
Yeah,
but it's our job to try and help them when we can.
100%. But no. Here's my thought. I have this playlist of two songs from Kevin Warren. We have them on and add a song to the playlist each time. Kevin, what song should we add to the playlist today?
I think that's asking a lot because to make a nice, efficient playlist for people, you'd have to come on like six or seven times.
Well, that's too bad.
I think that you should let the algorithm kind of take you where... Like these are songs we know he likes.
Sure.
These are songs that he might like.
Oh, sure. I could just hit like play radio and let the algorithm do it. But I think giving Kevin the opportunity, like he can go anywhere and talk about bear stuff to add to the playlist. That's our job. That's a safe space that we provide.
By the way, to go back to songs in the key of life, I gave Joe Madden a rare vinyl version of Songs in the Key of Life.
Did you really? Yeah, that's outstanding.
So that he could, because you know, he would have at his restaurant, he would bring people back there
and upstairs.
Yep, and listen to records. So,
yeah.
I'm a huge fan of that album. Another Star is in the top five of my favorite songs ever.
Knocks Me Off My Feet is the song I sang to propose to my wife.
Aw.
So,
look at you.
That whole record is just filled with greatness. But all
I'm
right,
biased, but I know I'm right.
So here's the thing. We've established a deeply meaningful and personal relationship with Kevin Warren that we promise you, dear listeners, we will leverage for all sorts of Bears information and scoops from here on out.
But not tickets.
No, I can't.
Sorry, and I know that's what you guys wanted us to leverage it for. Or to get your music played at Soldier Field, like one of the security people asked me after he left. You know which one, Ray. You know exactly which one did it. We'll talk a little bit about the Arlington Heights thing next here on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes.
We're cooking with hot grease now, man.
Afternoons on The Score.
I think that we've all kind of known that this was headed towards Arlington Heights, and nothing is official. And obviously, there are a lot of politico speaks in Chicago that are now strangely like, the Bears can't leave Chicago. It's like, what are we doing here, folks? But it does seem like that's the direction that all of this inertia is heading towards, is that the Bears are going to build on Arlington Heights because they spent $200 million on a piece of land. They're the largest landowner out in Arlington Heights. And they're going to build their place, you know, where if Beyonce comes and performs, you don't have to wait 2 hours because there's a dust storm or a thunderstorm because they'll have a dome there.
So it's interesting because amidst all the conversation, you know, that has been taking place, some people have realized why it took a while, for this to happen, and some people have not realized why. And it took a while to happen. The dalliance with Chicago, there is definitely some component of Kevin Warren falling in love with the idea, but there also is a big component of him trying to show Cook County that he gave it a fair shot, that he tried, that he really hit, man, look, I put plans together. I did what I needed to do here. Believe me, I would love to do it here. We just can't,
but,
guys.
But Arlington Heights is in Cook County, so they're good. They're good.
But they still need to green light a lot of the state stuff.
And the infrastructure stuff.
And the 100%. Infrastructure stuff. And there are going to be a lot of Cook County people within Chicago, you know, in positions of power who are pissed that it's not happening in Chicago, who wanted it to happen. So he had to prove to them that he actually gave it a fair shot. And so if the delay has meant that the costs on some things go up, okay. Overall, he needs the green light that now those people will hopefully provide, because at least in part, some of them will be like, I get it. Thanks for trying. I understand why you're doing it.
That's probably what's getting ready to happen. What is getting ready to happen on this show? Jason Leisure is going to join us next here on The Score.